This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
It's my pleasure to welcome Ed Martin to the show. He is president of the Eagle Forum and former head of the Missouri Republican Party and author of The Conservative Case for Trump. And boy, if anybody is in the news right now, it is Mr. Trump. Ed, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on. Yes, it's a good time to have written a book on the conservative case for Trump. People are definitely interested. It's not without some interest. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the interest could be positive or negative, right?
I mean, that's part of the problem, I guess. You know, it's some of it's positive and some of it's negative. That is right.
That's for sure. You know, outline the case for Trump, if you would, for a moment. I mean, why do you say the conservative case for Trump? I'll tell you why I asked you that question. At the beginning of Trump's candidacy, I noticed a lot of Republicans claiming that they thought Trump was a liberal. Oh, he's friends with Hillary, he supports some liberal causes, et cetera, et cetera. He's in New York, you know, that's pretty liberal. Some of the things he said, which I cannot remember at the beginning, seemed to lean to the left. Why don't you just call it the case for Trump? I had another author on the show that I think has a book by that name. Maybe that's the reason. Do we need a conservative case for Trump?
I'll tell you two sort of ways to answer that. First of all, when we went to write the book, Phyllis and I both, I have a little bit of a profile. I was former chairman of Missouri's Republican Party, and I endorsed Trump also on March 11th. And right after that, we were saying, well, what can we do to help him more specifically? And we started thinking about it, and we thought, Phyllis is a writer. Phyllis Schlafly, who is my boss, is really a writer. And she wanted to write about what the reasons for Trump were. And as we started down that path in the book that we wrote, The Conservative Case for Trump, it's 10 chapters. It's a pretty short book. It's a pocket-sized book when you see it. It's not a big, wide-open, heavy book. And we started thinking about it. And actually, the first part is we wanted to write about what we thought. And, you know, Phyllis Schlafly and I both have a profile as conservatives. So we were talking about, you know, we're writing why we think that. But then the publisher said to us, as we did, he said, you need to call it The Conservative Case for Trump. You need to go right into the sort of teeth of the argument. And so that was part of the preference. But if you look at the book, I actually think the reason that it's important beyond even this election is you have Phyllis Schlafly, who has a certain sort of canonical righteousness as a conservative, making an argument about conservatism. You know, in other words, the first two chapters of the book, and I'm now making the case, actually, you know, as you started the question, the first two chapters are not judges and pro-life. They're not military superiority. They're not some of these other issues. Those are chapters 7 and 9, I think, and others. The first two chapters are immigration and trade. And you say, well, why so? And Phyllis's reasoning, and I subscribe to it, but I certainly followed her lead in a sense, is because those two issues, which are sort of at the heart of American sovereignty, those are the turning questions, the key questions at this moment that Phyllis identified and that Trump put at the center of his campaign when he rode down the escalator at Trump Tower. And I think that's the starting point. And that's a dispute, right? There's some conservatives, so-called Republicans, who say, well, free trade is okay. And, we need more immigration and open borders up and things. But I think we're making an argument that this is what true conservatism is going forward and why we need Trump.
Okay, well, let's talk about trade for a moment. That's interesting. Now, Phyllis, who you keep mentioning, she was on the show, and she passed away recently, I believe, right?
She did. She passed away the day before the book came out, September 5th. She passed away at the age of 92. It was extraordinary life that she lived and joy she had. 6 children and 19 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Just a wonderful life. But yes, we lost her on September 5th.
Yeah. I just wanted to give some context for the audience. And I did have her on the show earlier this year. So where do you stand on trade then?
in the book, and what we talk about is that the notion of free trade and the free trade of goods and sort of the transactions that people recognize in the market system. You know, free markets, America's founded on it, right? I mean, one of our geniuses is the free market system. And Phyllis actually is was the chairman of the board of one of the oldest nonprofits in America called America's Future, which was founded in the 1940s to promote American exceptionalism and the free market system. So when you talk about free trade with other nations, it starts out on a point of sort of moral clarity. The free exchange of goods is a good thing, right? We like that. It's what America's about. The problem is the internationalists, the free trade agreements that we have been so bad. And, you know, Phyllis Schlafly is probably the one lone voice that has consistently been against NAFTA, against CAFTA, against all these deals. And because they just are terrible deals for America. And I think that's what the position would be, that the deals are bad for us. They've taken away jobs. They've transformed the economy in a way that, you know, it's hard to argue that they have, that deals like that and free market international trade has not, you know, it's hard to say it didn't transform us. The question becomes, what was it good and was it bad? And how do you go forward? But I think Trump has put that center stage. And then we're seeing, especially nations like China, you know, China really cheats and takes our intellectual property and takes our companies' jobs. And we've seen a shift from American companies that are looking out for American people and workers to international companies that are maximizing an international vision that is to the detriment of American sovereignty.
Well, I definitely agree with you on that. These companies have no loyalties at all. They are the complete globalist companies. I mean, they just move through jurisdictions like they're nothing. There's no loyalty whatsoever. They certainly don't pay taxes, but that may be some of our own government's fault for making the tax climate too difficult and allowing them to go offshore. But the trade issue is a very complicated issue because it seems to boil down to you can either have jobs at home or you can have low-priced products. You're going to trade one for the other to some extent. Am I wrong about that, by the way?
No, I think that there's some wisdom in that. I think the question is now is, can you go, some truth in that, and can you go back in time is the real test, right? I mean, can we go back and sort of reindustrialize America? I'm not sure we can, but it doesn't change the description, for example, of the TPP, the deal that was coming forward. I think it's really worth highlighting. Phyllis Schlafly, who died at 92, she started her career in politics in 1946, really 45. But back then, she was, as a married woman, she married soon after that, she was concerned at that time about communism. The evil empire was the communist Soviet Union. And there was a sense that world communism was the threat. And for her, all these years later, she said, the globalist agenda has really transformed the way we live. And that way we live in America was a particular Judeo-Christian kind of way of being. And so trade is one piece of a globalist agenda that is, you know, has a profound impact on what we're doing. So while it is true that if you dropped free trade, costs would go up, Walmart makes it cheap for us to buy a lawn chair to watch our kids play soccer. That's true. The question becomes, at what cost have we traded cheaper goods when we don't have nearly as many family-supporting jobs in our communities? And now the other question, by the way, fair charge to me and Phyllis, is, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, the first thing you got to do about it is try to have the kinds of agreements between parties that is honorable and enforceable and able to be kind of more even. If you're going to have them, let's make them even. That's, I think, the challenge.
I agree. Bill Clinton and many of the other politicians have just sold America down the river in terms of these trade agreements. I mean, they suck. And certainly I'm not an expert at them. They're very, very complex agreements. But they have not been good for America. They've been a result of influence peddling, probably, and all kinds of unsavory things, which is no surprise from the Clinton clan. What do you do? So do you institute tariffs? I mean, what's the plan there? You know, I mean, as a libertarian, which is my ideology, I'm not in favor of tariffs, but I got to tell you, I don't know that you can have legitimate free trade when you have such wage disparity and regulatory disparity. It's it's not fair to say, you know, we got to pay every American at least $15 an hour and more, because when minimum wage goes up, it raises all the other wages above it. It just trickles up. You know, American companies have to comply with massive regulations. These companies in China don't have to do this kind of stuff. They can kind of run free. And, you know, that's never going to be an equal scenario.
Right. Well, so you're headed towards the hard question, right? It's easy to say these things like, let's get better trade deals. Well, how do you do it? And what is the impact and all? And that's a harder thing. But let's pull back for 1 second. You said the key phrase, when you increase the size and scope of government and the size and scope and influence of governmental agencies and other governments in the world, you increase the likelihood that people are influenced by, call it crony capitalism, call it insider deal, call it corruption. I mean, whatever you want to call it. And what we have now is, and what you were seeing, frankly, in this race is Donald Trump. I saw a sticker or a photo they put out that said, it's us against the world. I mean, Donald Trump against the world. You have a set of people who have invested so long, decades, in a system that centralized power and influence in Washington, D.C. You know, even 30 years ago, you would have said, where's the center of power in America? You would have said, well, Detroit. You might have said New York City, you know, Wall Street, maybe D.C., maybe Hollywood. But now you say D.C. You know, Wall Street's had to come to D.C. on their knees. You know, Detroit has had to come to D.C., Hollywood. So it's Washington, D.C. and the world. And so now the question is, in whose interest is it to challenge the current way of functioning? I was once with a CEO of a major company here in the St. Louis area, and I said, well, you know, what do you do? He was talking about China forcing them to transfer technology as part of a ability to get into the market. And I said, what do you do? And he said, you get the best deal you can, and you then try to fight off your competitors, and you hang on, meaning you make a deal with the devil, and then you know, and literally the Chinese. The bigger thing now is, do we have a guy in Trump that is challenging the corrupt system in a way that can yield a dramatic change? I get excited when I hear Trump, and there is a chapter in the book on this, talk about cutting regulation. You know, we had George W. Bush get in as president. I admit 9/11 happened. It changed a lot. But what we ended up with was a better EPA administrator, but we didn't end up with an EPA administrator who reduced his own job's power. Right, we need some people that are going to get in office and they're going to relinquish power back to the states and to the people. I think Trump could do that. I think Trump really could do that. And when it comes to trade deals and things like that, I think we have a guy that could, you know, change the balance of power. You know, Scott Walker, who Phyllis and I both liked a lot when he started running, he was asked, what was the most impressive, in your mind, Reagan decision on foreign policy? And you know what he said? He said, when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers. And they mocked him. They said, oh, Scott Walker doesn't know what he's talking about. He's just a governor of Wisconsin. And later, Secretary of State Shultz said that was true. They found out later the Soviets realized that that cowboy from California, Ronald Reagan, would fire the air traffic controllers who had endorsed him because he wasn't going to mess around. They thought, holy cow, we got a cowboy on our hands. Well, I think we need a leader who's going to be a leader. And on the regulatory front, not mess around. On the tax front, I mean, what if we had a guy that actually cut taxes dramatically, estate taxes, everything, and led on that? I think it could be really transformative.
You know, listen, I mean, I've got my serious concerns about Trump, but I love the idea of having someone shake things up. You know, when Ross Perot was running and he predicted the giant sucking sound, which is exactly what happened, you know, he would have been great. I mean, we need to end the status quo in Washington. And if it takes, if you have to bite your tongue and you have to plug your nose and vote for Trump if you hate him, because I know a lot of you listening do, then maybe that's the thing you have to do. I don't know. I might end up with Gary Johnson, but God forbid, the Clinton clan is the status quo. It's the corruption. It's the favoritism. It's the cronyism, influence peddling. The government is basically for sale under the Clintons. I mean, that's the way they operate. We all know that.
Yeah, no, and I think, listen, let me say something clearly to people. I tell this story very frequently. Phyllis Schlafly did not think Ronald Reagan was the most conservative candidate in 1979 and even 80, but she decided he was the one who could win and was strong on the Soviet Union and communism. But, you know, he was in office, and a few months after he got in, he appointed Sandra Day O'Connor. He nominated her, and Phyllis Schlafly protested. She led a picket outside the White House against him because she thought Sandra Day O'Connor was too liberal. And later, she backed him in Geneva, Reagan backed him in Geneva. In other words, presidents will disappoint us. They will do that. And so they're not perfect. But when you read the book, The Conservative Case for Trump, you're going to see that I think Trump is on the side against the kingmakers and for the people. And as you say, we're at a key pivotal moment. Look, if Hillary gets into office in just 4 short years, the plan is for more amnesty for illegals, not just because they think that's good for a dependent state, but also because it will tip Virginia and Florida into the electoral column for the Electoral College for the Democrats. We won't win another election after 4 more years of amnesty if we keep going this way. That's what they're doing. They're playing chess. You know, the left is playing chess compared to us sometimes playing, you know, boxing each other. And let me say one more thing. Paul Ryan, who I'm bitterly disappointed in for his machinations, you know, he's kind of, I call him Hamlet on the Hill. He's not going to defend Trump, but he won't unendorse him. You know, I mean, come on, man, have some courage. If you're either for him or against him, I'd be for him. But let me say this. Perhaps we'll have a Congress that if they don't like President Trump, they will rediscover their Article I authority. And they will actually say, we under the Constitution have authority to do things like remove the jurisdiction of the president, pass laws that we can override him on, or take away jurisdiction from the Supreme Court, or God forbid, defund the executive or judicial because that's what's in their power. That would be great. Look, I'd like to see Speaker Ryan disagree with Donald President Trump on trade and have it out. Then we would have a stronger government with co-equal branches instead of a dominant executive, which we've had under Bush and Obama. It's not good for us. It's not a good system. We need balance. So that would be okay with me, you know, but we need that. We need to understand who's on our side. And I ran for office and some of my best supporters were Libertarian Party loyalists who came over to help me. So I respect immensely the instinct. I just think Phyllis Schlafly used to say, in America, it's a two-party system. You want a third or fourth or fifth party, go to Europe. It's there. Good or bad, unfortunate or not, we're stuck with two parties. You got to pick one of the two, and that's what we think people need to do, and we think Trump is good and qualified, and there you are.
Do you have any greater concerns with all the stuff in the news lately with the, you know, the locker room tapes, the, you know, Bill Clinton is a sexual predator.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right.
Hillary has vilified and attacked every one of his victims just relentlessly. I mean, it's, please, liberal friends listening, go and find those videos. They're on YouTube. And they're from years ago. Some are current interviews. Some are from decades ago. You can see that the kind of the Clintons are just really not good people.
Yeah. Look, the good news is that 30 days out, the Clintons have dropped these terrible videos and audios of Donald Trump. You know, I think it was deplorable language. I'm glad he apologized. But look, again, Phyllis Schlafly used to say, "We're electing a president, not a pastor." I mean, I don't want him to be a terrible person. I would hope he gets better and better. Although sometimes I think when you're exposed to some of these things, you get better. I mean, you learn to be a better man, I hope. But at the end of the day, it's still a choice. And when I look at Donald Trump, I was at the debate the other night in St. Louis. When I look at this guy, this is a man for the moment. I mean, I'm not saying he's perfect. We're not arguing about that. I'm saying he's a strong, serious guy. I believe he loves America. I believe that he feels strongly that he can do the job. And if he gets the job, I think Donald Trump didn't need this job. I think he'll want to be a great president. I think he'll work, you know, endlessly to do it. Hillary, this is what they do. They just like power. They want power. They use power. And I think, you know, so let's take a chance. You know, I think it's very powerful. When I live in St. Louis, I've lived in the city of St. Louis for almost 20 years. I moved here from New Jersey, you know, Jersey City and places. You look at the city of St. Louis, we have Ferguson just outside the city, you know, in St. Louis County. The, you know, African-Americans in large segments of where they live, they've been left in terrible situations. When Donald Trump looks at them and says, give me a chance to try something different, I think people ought to look at that and say, nobody's tried, nobody said that to us. Let's see what he'll do. And if he doesn't do it, after one term, he'll be out. You know, he will be. So I just get excited about thinking, and here's another one. Military superiority is a chapter in the book. I think Trump really internalizes that you're supposed to be, I'm not saying he's a war hero. I don't, you know, he didn't serve, neither did a lot of these guys. I'm saying that he internalizes that we're supposed to be so darn strong that our enemies fear us and our allies rely on us, and we don't need to be the sort of the policeman of the world. We just need to be tough and serious, not a social experiment. And I think if we do that, we have a chance to be really, really great. And I think he can do that. If we leave Hillary in, Hillary's going to keep this transgender military thing going and all this stuff. I mean, come on. It's not the Department of Education, right? It's the military. It's the fighting force. And we've got to remember that.
Give out your website. Tell people they can find out more about you.
Well, you can always call me, email me, excuse me, at ed@eagleforum.org. It's ed@eagleforum.org. I tell people I love to be on email. It's, you know, I'm regularly on there. Our own website is eagleforum.org. And then you can always find the book, The Conservative Case for Trump, pretty much everywhere you go nowadays. I encourage people usually to find a local bookseller. They can usually get you as good a price. It may take a day or two longer, but it's available on all the kinds of seller sites.
Well, if you order from Amazon, you'll be supporting Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post, who created an entire army to attack Trump. That was their sole purpose.
Exactly.
Jeff Bezos assigned like 22 reporters to just defame and destroy Donald Trump. That was their marching order. So this is the kind of context in which we live, folks. You live in a very left-wing media environment. So, you know, just understand that. Everything you see in here pretty much is skewed in that direction. So, Ed Martin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, artmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice, or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.